Hi, I'm Sean Ellis, founder of the Speakers Group, and I am talking now with Ed Brodo, speaker, expert, and best-selling author of Negotiation Boot Camp and Getting a Success Change. Ed has been speaking for a number of years, led the Negotiation Boot Camp for almost 20 years, which was really the class of the industry in terms of a negotiation seminar. So he's done a lot of great things, and the purpose here is just to talk about maybe some of the things that you've seen along the way, Ed, any advice you might have, maybe any of that advice of the sort of, I wish I had known then what I know now. But these last few years have been challenging for speakers, and unfortunately some of them have had to close the doors on their businesses. But what's been the key to your staying power? Is there anything you would identify that you could share with other speakers?
Yes, there are several things I would identify. And yes, it has been rough the last few years. It was rough around 2000. And 2001, I got through that. The last few years have been tough, but this year is turning out to be a great year. So I got through this, and I think that I would say that my longevity is based on several things. First of all, I believe in keeping my business in a very kind of Spartan way. What I mean by that is I don't have a lot of expenses. I don't have a staff full of people. I don't have an office where I have to pay rent. I keep my expenses down. I even keep my personal expenses down. So I don't have to, I'm not in a position where I have to make a certain nut in order to survive. So that means that when things get rough, you know, I'm lean and mean. I can get through this. Another thing that I've done, which I've noticed a lot of speakers have not done, and it bothers me a lot, is I have maintained my fees. And I should say something about my philosophy about fees and about speaking in general. I've been speaking for 25 years, and I know that many speakers, especially NSA speakers, like to go around bragging about how I do 140 speeches every year. Or I do 120 speeches. If I did 140 speeches a year, I'd be in the hospital. I don't know how the hell these people do it. My philosophy is different. I believe in working less and charging more.
That's a good one. I like that philosophy.
And it's what I teach when I teach to my clients. I mean, I believe that people want to pay more for things. I think they perceive more value for something that's where the fee is higher, especially speakers. I mean, you look at a speaker who's $15,000 as opposed to a speaker who's $5,000, there is an implicit awareness that the $15,000 speaker is bringing something more to the table than the $5,000 speaker.
Sure.
And the other part of it is, if I speak, if I'm a $15,000 speaker, I have to speak, I can speak a third of the time, a third as much as the $5,000 speaker and make the same amount of money.
Right.
And the rest of the time I can stay home in my beautiful Monterey Peninsula and watch the sunset, which I love to do. So a lot of that, you know, that was a decision I made when I started my business, that was my model, that I wanted to work less and charge more. And as things got rough, especially like in the last few years, there have been many situations where I could have lowered my fees. I did lower them sometimes a little bit, but not a lot. But I've maintained my basic fees exactly where they were. In fact, I even raised my fees at one point not too long ago. And the result is that now that things are coming back, I'm out there, you know, with my higher fees.
Yeah.
And the speakers who lowered, you know, cut their fees in half or by a third, they're in a whole different category now. They have, in effect, put themselves in a lower category.
Right.
And I kind of feel sorry for them. I think it's a shame. I want to encourage my fellow speakers to keep the fees high. I think people will pay more if they perceive the value. And, you know, it's up to us to convey that there's value.
Good points. Just talking about fees, because I know that's always I get questions about that from speakers. You know, what are people charging? What should I charge? What's kind of your philosophy on how you go about setting a fee. To, you know, you want to set it high enough where there is that perceived value. You also want to make sure you can deliver on, you know, on the fee that you're asking and charging. But just any general advice or thoughts on setting a fee?
Yes. My advice is more is better.
Okay.
And how do you determine what is more? How do you, I guess it's different if you're starting out as a speaker. You got to, I always say, when I'm talking to groups of new speakers, I say, look around, talk to people who are speaking on your topic, who have the same amount of experience that you're speaking, that you have, and find out what the range is. You'll find a range of fees among those people. And I would start out at the high end of that range. So if you've been speaking for 3 years, and you look at other speakers who are speaking on your topic for 3 years, and the range is 2,000 to 8,000, I would start at 8,000.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a speaker that's been around for a while, you're in a different situation. You already know pretty much what people are willing to pay. The question is, will they pay more? And one thing that we find is that when you raise your fees, you're always going to exclude some of your old clients who can no longer afford the fee.
True.
But that's okay. That's okay. I mean, there are a lot of people around today who are clients of mine 20 years ago who couldn't approach affording what I charge right now. And that's life. You know, that's how it is. But I have a whole new group of clients who are able to afford it.
Right.
So you kind of have to experiment a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
You raise your fee. If it doesn't work, you change it. I don't know. I don't think there's there's one absolute way to do it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I know there are a lot of different philosophies, but I think that's great advice. And you're right. If you go from $5,000 to $15,000, then the people who are looking at speakers for, you know, 5,000 or 3 to 5, you know, they're not going to look at you at 15, but also those clients who have $15,000, they were never going to look at you at 5,000. So like you said, it brings you into a whole different market that way.
And you brought up something else, too. I think you said something to the effect of, what do you think you're worth? I was talking to a speaker who's been at it. I've been at it 25 years. I think he's been at it for almost 40 years. And he charges about half of what I charge. Huh. And we were actually on the program once. And that night we were out having dinner and we were chatting. And I said, I got to ask you something. I said, how come you only charge what you charge? And he said, very candidly, he said, that's all I think I'm worth. And I was kind of shocked.
Yeah.
I did a program once for an NSA chapter where a woman raised her hand. She had a question. She said, you know, I have a new topic that I've been talking about. It's a new topic, and I charge a lot for my old topics that I know a lot about, but I feel that I'm sort of almost ashamed to charge as much for the new topic because I don't have as much experience. And I said, this is a true story. I said, how long have you been doing the new topic? She said, 14 years.
Wow.
She didn't think that 14 years qualified her to raise her fee.
Yeah.
Now, who's got the problem? Where's the problem coming? The problem is not coming from the client.
Yeah.
The problem is coming in so many cases from the speaker who is has these ideas going through their head that says, oh, I don't deserve this, or I'm not good enough for this, or I'm not as good as so-and-so, or they won't pay this. This is all a lot of garbage that goes on inside the speaker's head. So it's from a negotiation standpoint, it's an internal negotiation. It's not a negotiation with the client.
Right.
You got to convince yourself first that you're worth it.
Yeah.
And the client, I was a movie actor, and I became a negotiation expert. And one of my friends said to me some years later, he said, how did you become a negotiation expert? I mean, you were a movie actor. And I said, I became a negotiation expert by saying that I was a negotiation expert and putting it out there, and people bought it. I did it with confidence, and people accepted it.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to ask you about that actually, because that's great. You've got, you know, you've been endorsed. The former SEC chairman called you the king of negotiators. I know Forbes.
Who'd be the king?
Pardon me?
It's good to be the king.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's, you know, that's a dream for any speaker. If you can become the king or queen of your topic, then you're in pretty good shape. So would you attribute it all back to just confidently saying I'm a negotiation expert?
Well, everybody has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, even Einstein started somewhere.
Right. That's great.
You start. What do you do? I mean, you have to. Either you're going to depend on your validation from external sources or from internal sources. Either you depend on the clients to say, oh, he or she is worth it, or they're not worth it, or you depend on yourself and you say, I am worth it. I am good. I know I have something to share, and I'm going to put it out there. It's amazing how that attitude really translates into success in the business.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's worth the price of admission right there. I mean, it's great advice that I think all of us need, just to be reminded of that, to believe in ourselves and have the confidence in what we have to offer. And if you don't have that confidence, then, you know, you might want to rethink what you're doing in the first place, I guess you could say, or rethink your topic or wherever you're trying to position yourself.
Well, you and I talked about this recently. We won't say who the speaker was, but I mentioned a speaker who I had never heard of. Yeah. And this speaker, suddenly I'm seeing the speaker's name everywhere. And this apparently is a speaker who knows how to promote.
Yeah, right.
Themselves. And it's amazing because this is somebody who's fairly new in the business, but that speaker is not saying, hey, I have no business being here. I don't have a background. No, that speaker is taking all of the pluses that they have in their background and putting it out there in a very positive way, and people are responding to it.
Yeah.
Well, would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that's the ultimate judge or jury on the whole thing, is if people are buying it and they're, you know, giving good testimonials and feedback and telling others, well, then I guess then you know that the value's there. If you go out and do it and it bombs and you know, it just all blows up on you, well, that's
well, obviously you've got to be able to perform.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing. We haven't talked about that. You got to be able to come through.
Sure.
Once you convince the client that you know you're the one, you have to perform.
Yeah.
Because if you're great at marketing yourself, but you can't perform once you get up on the platform, eventually that's going to get around, and that's going to be the end of your career. So you have to back it up with something.
Right. Yeah. That's the given there. Well, let me ask before we go. I wanted to ask you. You did the negotiation boot camp seminar for a number of years. Do you see that was a? I know you still do that for companies now, but you did that as a public event as well, didn't you?
I've done a few of them. Well, I started out working for a seminar company that did public seminars. That's how
okay.
I got into the speaking business. But when I started my own business, I decided I would not do public seminars, that I would only do company in-house seminars.
Okay.
At one point, I did a couple of publics just to try it, but frankly, it was too much of a pain in the ass, and I decided I don't want to be bothered with it.
Yeah.
Much easier, from my perspective, much easier to just have one client, the corporation, you know, there's the client, they bring the people in, I show up, do my thing, I leave, I get paid.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just curious, because I don't have much, if any, experience really on the public seminar side, so I was just curious to hear what your experience
there
was.
There are some people that do that sort of thing. I'm not one of them. I don't know a lot about it, and I'm not going to give advice about something that I really am not that familiar with. I know, you know, some people do it. I don't know how successful they are. I know there's a lot of hype out there.
Yeah.
All I know is that from my own experience, it takes a lot of work, and it doesn't fit in with my model, my business model, which I described earlier, you know, keeping the business lean and mean.
Yeah.
Keeping expenses down and keeping profits up.
Right. Well, very good. Anything else that you want to share? I mean, this has been great. I've enjoyed it, and hopefully the other speakers in the group listening will enjoy this. But anything else that you want to share before we go?
Yeah, there is one thing, and that is that this is not a zero-sum game, speaking. There's always room for more speakers, good speakers. There's always room.
Yeah.
people sometimes think, well, you know, there's somebody else speaks on this topic and they're good. There's always room for more speakers if they're good speakers. And I think people need to keep that in mind. And that's true in every profession. There's always room for people who are good at what they do.
Right. That's good. It's a good point of view. And it also just from a, you know, I have the same mindset, just the abundance mentality that there's, you know, there's enough room out there for all of us. And there are even, you know, opportunities for us to, sometimes you can work with someone that you might at first glance think it's a competitor, but who knows, it could be a great partner to you. You just never know. So it's, I think just having that mindset that it's, you don't have to be afraid that a new speaker comes into the market.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I guess I should mention is that this whole business with the economy, you know, there are good times, there are bad times. If someone decides that I want to be a speaker, then they have to accept that there will be ups and downs. And you just comes with the territory. And the people who are successful in the long term are the ones that deal with that.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah, I know. That's what I've seen in these last few years. The ones who, speakers who are willing to adapt and, you know, do things differently where necessary and improve. And those are the speakers who have come through, and the ones who, you know, either didn't have their businesses built right in the first place, or who were, you know, just stuck trying to do things the way things used to be done. It's just, I guess it's just basic business practice, business strategy at that point.
It's all about value, Sean. If you have something to offer, people are going to want it. If you don't have anything to offer, they're not going to want it.
True. Yep, that's the bottom line for sure. Well, very good, Ed. I appreciate you sharing, being generous to share your insights and experience with other speakers. And like I said, I've enjoyed it. And for those of you listening, if you're not already connected with Ed, his websites are negotiationbootcamp.com and brodo.com, brodow.com. He's also on Twitter at Ed Brodo. So connect with him there and see some of those great pictures of his Monterey Peninsula. But thanks again, Ed, and thank you for being part of the speakers group, and for all of you who are listening. It's a treat for me and a joy for me to be a part of this with you. So thank you.